Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, we had a jokester in contention at Napa. We get to everything that happened in wine country to kick off the new season, but also it's more importantly Ryder Cup week. We have the gossip as we head into the USA versus Europe grudge match, plus NFL week two and college football betting madness and a crazy weekend for myself, plus everything we're tuned into outside of sports. And this week's guest, Dr. Bernd Bernacki, very cool conversation on the history of golf going back to the beginning, collectibles, artifacts, and the way the game has changed over time. Very neat conversation. Plus, we always end with food, and all of it brought to you by our friends at City Bonfires. They are the makeable of that portable, reusable bonfire that you see all over social media. It's extremely easy to light with a stick lighter and easy to put out. You can put it in your beach bag, backpack. It's easy to take around anywhere with you to give you that bonfire environment, but in a nice, intimate setting. So again, check out City Bonfires and citybonfires.com. Our promo code is COLFIRE, that's COLFIRE, to save 10% off any order on the website. Again, COLFIRE to save 10% off any order on the website. And yes, they do have s'mores kits too. So check them out, citybonfires.com.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf and Tosi Snacks. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, the new golf season got underway in Napa, right next to the grapes that get mashed and turned into wine, thanks to the magic of science, yes. Fermentation, and all that fun stuff. I don't know. I don't drink it. So
Said. It's actually crush season for the wine aficionados. I just learned there's a whole thing that's going on out there in Napa for the wine drinkers. But it was golf that we were actually paying attention to as golf. We got the season going.
And I was more impressed by Max Homa's facial hair than by him taking out a win. His third win now on tour. We can start saying he's a three-time PGA Tour winner.
He's a guy,
And he's also probably going to win some money in the PIP. So he's rolling in dough.
He is. Yeah. I mean, obviously kind of one of the cooler personalities on golf for those that are in the golf social media landscape. He's one of those names that he's just not quite fully mainstream yet, I would say. But because of how hilarious he is on the internet and how great of a follow he is on Twitter, he's picked up a big following. And I feel like the facial hair just even further personifies kind of how ridiculous he is. He's a very self-deprecating guy that makes fun of himself at absolutely every corner of every day, of every round, every tournament he plays. So it's funny to see a guy like this succeed in actual real life, because then like he gets to the end of the week, he's like, oh wow, like I can stop self-deprecating myself. I just won on the PGA Tour again. So he's becoming the real deal now. Like you said, getting that third win done. And he got a little pressure from Maverick McNally and a couple other guys in contention, but held him off by a shot in the end.
You know, I am, though, really disappointed that Max Homa is now a three-time champion, because this just means like he really won't come on our podcast. He really won't now. He's a big deal. He's won three times. He doesn't have room for small potatoes like us, which is too bad, because I think we're great. I think, you know, golf can really benefit from us being here in this space. And Max would really be a great addition to the conversations we have on this podcast.
Yeah, I think I remember asking him after win number one, and here we are, number three, unfortunately. So shout out to Max. Keep doing you, keep tweeting, and it was good to see him lift the trophy, mustache and all, to start the season.
That was indeed. And also, our boy Dylan Wu made his PGA Tour debut, made the cut.
I mean, that's what's important, right? It's just like when you're getting out here and you're getting your feet wet and you know that you've got the card, you've got the season in front of you, it's like, just kind of catch your bearings and get used to what it's going to be like planning your week out, which he discussed when we interviewed him. Check out our archives for that conversation. But whenever we have these pros on, you know, the difference between the tours, it comes with a lot of learning. You got to learn a whole new set of subset of courses and how to travel appropriately. So shout out for him getting it done. You know, he got to Napa a little bit early. Did get to enjoy his time going to restaurants and wineries there, but also made the cut, played the weekend. So good start to a friend of the show there.
Was indeed. Let's start talking about the big event going on this week. That is the Ryder Cup. at Whistling Straits, home to the 2015 Bunker Ground Your Club Gate with Dustin Johnson, as we remember.
Yes,
on the,
that is right.
I think that was the 72nd hole. He went ahead and, you know, just put that club down on the ground, the PGA Championship, didn't win. That was like his breakout moment to me, but also I thought after that he was done. We like didn't hear from him for a while, and of course now he's one of the best players in the world. So
yes, he then immediately proceeded to dominate the world of golf after that, but that was a big lump for him to take. Mm-hmm. Indeed, in that moment. Yes, it was a bunker. I still don't know how you called it a bunker, but they did, and that was the controversial ruling. And this course has a lot of cool history now. They've had a couple of PGA Championships here. They've had a lot of other competitions here in recent years. It's a great, you know, resort destination location for golfers as well. Mm-hmm. Who want to take that buddy's trip. Our mutual friend, my buddy David, got a chance to play the course a few weeks ago. Little tidbit from him. I asked for a little scouting because it is Ryder Cup week. And he said, the winds are unreal, Mike. Unreal. He said there was multiple drives where normally his 240, 250 ball went over 300 yards. And then there were actually balls where he thought they were going sideways, that he was hitting into the wind. So if that tells you anything, it tells you that there's going to be a lot of unpredictability with the golf ball once it's in the air this week. That's going to make for fun match play, indeed.
It really is, which, you know, makes you wonder, are we really playing in the United States? Or are we playing in Europe? Or are we playing in a British links-style course here?
Oh, yeah.
Which begs the question through all of this. Team USA has only won two Ryder Cups in the last 20 years, and for some reason they're heavily favored in the odds right now. Is this Team Europe's one to win again? I feel like they're really the favorites here. I don't understand why the odds say something else.
Yeah, and not only is it like heavily favored, Mike, it's minus 187 USA the favorite. For those at home that don't put money on anything, that means that you would have to bet $18.70 to win 10, to get back 10. Yeah. You'd have to place an $18.70 bet. Europe sitting at plus 188, so a $10 Euro bet wins you $18.80. So much value there for Team Europe bettors. Mike, I hate to say it. We've been leading up to this moment for a couple of weeks now. Are we going to turn our hands on our own nation in the name of winning some money? Because a Europe value bet just seems like completely obvious right now, the way things stand.
I mean, there's two things going on here. One, if I'm going to lose money, I'd rather lose money with the opportunity to win than the other way around.
That tells me where your head's at this week. Yep.
And two, I do legitimately have this gut feeling that Team Europe is going to win.
What the skeptical question to ask Team USA, and don't get me wrong, we're here, we're red, white, and blue, and we're Americans by heart and soul. But the question to ask is, what makes anyone think, based on recent headlines, that this team is going to suddenly come together and find some sort of chemistry to get it done in a team competition format? Well, there's no headline that leads you to believe that's happening. I hope it is behind the scenes. I don't know what strings Steve Stricker and assistant captains, and I don't know, are we going to get Michael Jordan there? Are we going to have Tiger show up out of nowhere for support? What are we going to do to garner any sort of magic to get this team together to play Europe this weekend? That's what I'm wondering.
I don't know what you could do. Maybe bring Coach K in to give a rousing speech or something. I mean, yeah, I guess you could bring in Michael Jordan. You have Tiger Skype in. He could be there in person. I don't know. That'd be a nice public appearance for him to kind of show back up in the golf world.
But that could happen, Mike. So watching out for that. I don't know. It would be interesting for sure. But Steve Stricker was asked last week when he was playing on the Champions Tour. A fan asked him on the first tee, you going to put Brooks and Bryson together in a pairing? he quickly shook his head and said, I don't think so. Confirmed not happening.
Can we talk about Brooks for a moment? Because after last week's episode, as usual, headlines dropped about Brooks saying how he doesn't like the Ryder Cup week. He doesn't like going from how it is a very individual sport. You do everything on your own. And then all of a sudden you do Ryder Cup week and your routine is thrown up in the air. You have to do everything that the captain tells you to do the way they tell you to do it as a team. And it just alters everything. Now, there's people out there you see yelling that Brooks should leave. It's like, if you don't like it, you can leave and we can let someone else do it for you. But my problem with all this is that he is 100% right. You're throwing guys who do this sport every week in the same routine and you upend it. You do. That's what happens here.
It is. I agree that he is right. I just think people hate that he said it when he did. It's just the timing and the delivery of the message. It makes it look like he is not ready to adjust for this moment in this week. A lot of people are trying to tell books, hey, just like, we get it. I understand that it's different. Well, duh. Yeah, it's different. It's the Ryder Cup. That's what makes it as unique as it is. It truly is a team competition with very different formatting and a different order and schedule of play. So I inherently agree with him that, yes, it upends his normal week-to-week PGA Tour schedule, but he's got a deal if he's looking to be one of these pillars of Team USA. And I don't really know that he is, which is, again, leading to that uncertainty surrounding Team USA.
Well, you know, I do have a feeling that Brooks could do better than Bryson, because Bryson just destroyed his hands this week, and that's all we need.
I saw that, and I love that. Yeah, but side note, Bryson, as you watch him in the Ryder Cup, keep in mind, he is already booked to play in a long drive competition on Monday afternoon next week. Yeah. So, like, wherever you think his head might be, like, maybe he's just, like, already on to the long bombs and trying to hit it 500 yards with the long drivers on Monday. So, needless to say, there are headlines aplenty heading into U.S. versus Europe. We'll be watching it all. It starts early Friday morning. Whistling Straits, that's going to be a fantastic venue, regardless of what you think about what's going to happen. That's going to be a cool course to watch this all go down. Ryder Cup 2021. Good to have it back for the first time in 3 years.
Yep, and we'll have our official picks up. Spoiler, we're probably going to pick Team Europe.
Yeah, I mean, how about a tie? Plus 1,200 for a tie, Mike? Maybe we can go that way.
I feel like it's really throwing money away. I want a potential to win money. I feel like a tie, you're really throwing it away when you go for a tie.
Tough sell. So, yeah, Course of Life 1 and MWRNC for the picks by 1-0 Thursday this week from the actual Whistling Straits.
All right, let's switch over to Tuned In, where we share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. It was a award weekend this weekend.
Yes, we're back. We're on the award show beat. The Emmys returned. I feel like it hasn't been a year. Maybe it hasn't. I don't know. It just feels like the Emmys just happened, but they were back again. Nothing wrong with that. That's okay. I was at a concert Sunday night, but I got to see enough of the show to know that your guy, my guy, everyone's favorite coach, Ted Lasso, just absolutely swept house. It was a great night for that show. The Crown also taking a crazy amount of awards, too. I knew you were a proud fan there in that moment.
I mean, Roy fucking Kent is a god. So
it's your guy. That's your guy. Yeah. So big night for the Ted Lasso fans out there. And shout out to the Emmys. It was good to see an award show. Again, we're getting fully back, not quite to the full stage auditorium, but a nicer venue, lots of precautions in place. And it was good to see everyone hand out the award safely. So, yeah, award season taking the turn into the fall now. What were you tuned into?
So I actually watched the new Gunpowder Milkshake movie on Netflix starring Karen Gillian.
I heard about this only by name on the red carpet last night, but tell me what I'm missing. What's going on here?
So have you ever seen, you've seen the likes of John Wick? You've seen that, right?
Yes, familiar with John Wick.
Yeah, so it's a similar idea about an assassin and a super secret assassin society and the mass infrastructure set up to support super assassin societies and kind of going rogue. And it was, the more I think about it, the more I liked it and enjoyed it. It felt referential only because John Wick happened already and was made already, but there was a really good kind of different dynamic to it. There was a more of a family dynamic to this. It was a bit more of a family drama going on throughout the movie. And some good action scenes. I mean, Karen Gillian has kind of turned in. She first burst out on the scene in Doctor Who, and now she's a full-fledged action star. And I think she does pretty well in these roles. So it was good. If you're looking to kill a couple hours on Netflix, I would recommend it. Gunpowder Milkshake.
Good suggestions, indeed. That is what we're tuned into this week. And I think it's interview time. Let's get to this week's guest.
Let's get into this week's guest. This may be the very first doctor we've ever had.
I think so. Yeah. Unofficially, I think so. I went back into the records to try and confirm that, and I wasn't locating any other doctors. So this may be the first one. Yeah.
Yeah. But doctor or not, it doesn't really matter about what you guys are going to talk about. You're talking about both history and memorabilia. Because you talked with Dr. Bern Bernanke, who runs the Golf Heritage Society.
Yes, that's right. This is for the history buffs out there. I know you love kind of rewinding the clock back to the origins of where it all began. We're talking early golf, artifacts, history, and collectibles of the game. What are the most valuable pieces in the world of golf? That was a good question he answered, and a few more things regarding an interesting piece of memorabilia that I shared from my childhood as well, too. This is a fun conversation with Dr. Bernacki.
We'll get into all that in just a moment. But first, as always, this interview is brought to you by Desert Fox Golf, our friends of the show and the makers of the Phone Caddy. The Phone Caddy lets you strap your phone right onto the side of your golf cart so it's easy to view and use all day long. No more fumbling around the dark spaces of your golf cart, dropping your phone on the seat, or even worse, onto the grass as you drive away. Caddy keeps you locked in safely so you can stay locked into your round. It'll be the talk of your foursome, and it makes a great gift. And guess what? It's like Christmas is right around the corner, Alex. It's time to get one. Oh my God,
you're doing that already. It's wow.
Here. I'm sorry. Jeez. It's almost the end of September. It's almost October. We're months away from Christmas here.
You just dropped Christmas shopping season. I guess it's officially begun, everyone. Get excited. We're 90 days out here. Love
it. It's coming. So save 10% because you're going to get phone caddies for all the golfers in your world to stick in their stockings or put under your tree. So save 10% off your purchase with the promo code Course of Life. Get any number of colors. You can get something from the Patriotic line, whatever you want. Save 10% promo code Course of Life. Their website, desertfoxgolf.com. Again, that promo code is Course of Life. The website, desertfoxgolf.com. Head on over there. Get yourself and all your friends a phone caddy today.
Next up on the tee from the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania area, we have the president of the Golf Heritage Society. Very cool organization that honors the history of the game. It's Dr. Bern Bernacki joining us on the Course of Life. Doctor, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, Alex. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm loving that we got in touch and I got to learn a whole lot more about the Golf Heritage Society, something I knew a little bit about. We'll get into the history of the organization and everything that you guys do at GHS. But I want to start with the beginning and just your impression and first background in the game of golf. How early in life did you find the game?
Well, I started playing when I was 9 at my municipal course, which I played on yesterday.
Nice. Love it. You're a true local indeed, right? So I'm curious, how long into your life did you find medicine? I know you practice in family medicine. Was this something that was kind of passed down to you from the generation before you? Or did you kind of get into medicine yourself? And when did that all intersect?
Good question. No, it's not in the family. And when I was in grade school, I was either going to become a priest or a physician. And the science part and the social science always appealed to me. So I was very fortunate to have my dream and become a physician.
Very cool. How long have you been practicing family medicine now?
Well, I'm in my neighborhood here 34 years, and before that, a few more. So this is the 40th year after graduating medical school.
Wow, that's awesome. Truly a lifelong practice and lifelong game is golf as well, too, which has been attached to the hip for you, just like lots of us for our entire lives. So tell me about your introduction to maybe the history of the game. You know, obviously you grew up playing the game. There's always a point in someone's golfing life when they look back at the history of the game. It happened for me kind of like in libraries, in my high school years, you know, researching the game a little bit more as I really grew my passion for it. But I'm curious when you started diving into the history of the game a little bit more.
Well, yeah, I think it started on day one because my first round of golf at that municipal course I mentioned, I had 5 clubs and 2 of them were hickory clubs. And one of them, I didn't even know what it was, but it was a Pyrotone. That plastic coated looked like wood, but was really metal underneath. And I played with those clubs until Uncle Harry gave me a matched set when he got a new set. And that was that. And I never thought much about it. One day I was in a antique shop with my wife looking at the ceiling while she was shopping for something. And she said, well, why don't you look for some golf stuff? So there became a new interest, hobby. The rest is literally Burns history.
Yeah, it is history indeed. It's the Golf Heritage Society, the GHS, and there's a convention coming up to honor the 50th anniversary as well, which we'll get into a little bit more. The depth of the history of golf is insane for people who don't know, but for people who are maybe just getting introduced to golf or a little bit outside the game and don't realize like how far back the history in the game goes, give some people an idea just how far truly back we've traced the game.
Wow. You know, there's a lot of argument about when, where, and how. Of course, across the pond in St. Andrews, the old course in Musselburgh, those are the oldest organized known courses. But way before that, people argue whether there was golf in the Netherlands. And some folks say that there were some stick and ball games going on in Asia as well. So yes. No one really knows.
It's far indeed. No matter where it started, it was a long, long time ago. Stick and ball. Love that reference. So the Golf Heritage Society, as this all plays in, talk to me about the mission of the organization specifically. Obviously, you're honoring the history of the game. How is that being done primarily?
Well, you know, the mission statement is a little bit formal, but we like to say that we love to help people understand the traditions of the game of golf and enjoy golf in a thousand ways. The artifacts of the game each tell a story, and our people understand those artifacts and bring the history of the game to life using those artifacts. And so the mission is to reach out to all folks, young and old, men and women, and help them understand the wonderful rich traditions of the game of golf.
Very cool. I love that statement indeed. Let's talk about one of those artifacts that you mentioned, and you had the opportunity to play with these clubs growing up. So for our population listening that may be born in the 21st century, our younger audience listening, there were actually hickory wooden golf clubs back in the day. They're still hanging around. You can find them all over the place. But just for everyone who really doesn't know truly the origin of the golf club, explain kind of what went into creating those old school golf clubs that you played with growing up.
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, these clubs were handmade, Alex. They were forged. They were hammered out one at a time. And when we play golf with a pre-1900 set of clubs, they were smooth-faced with a heavy hosel. And you can see the nicking and markings on them that identify them as such. And with that club, those balls were gutty balls, which were a solid ball made of a Malaysian rubber. And that's the ball that brought the game of golf to the masses, because the feathery ball, a skilled craftsman could only make two in a day. And it was the rich people that played those with those long-nosed wooden clubs. Those balls would last maybe a few holes so that only the wealthy could play that game. The caddies who carried the bags for the wealthy people found this packing material called gutta percha, which was put between furnishings and things that came overseas.
Okay.
And they would break off a piece, form it into a ball, and the ball started getting knocked around by the caddies. So now everybody could play the game. That's why Scotland became the home of golf, because everybody was doing it. Now, for the clubs, of course, they were wooden sticks in those hosels, and then they started to have more production and manufacture. So then lines were put onto the clubs. Dots were first, then lines. So on those hickory clubs, if you have a smooth face, it's the oldest, followed by dot clubs with random or organized faces. And then you'll see the line pattern. So you can kind of judge the age of a club that way.
Like taking a look at the rings inside of a tree or something like that. All the different patterns in the clubs.
Great analogy, sure.
The age
sure.
There, that's very neat for anyone who's digging through their garage right now, looking at their old hickory. So I got to learn more about these hickory golf tournaments that I've heard about through the GHS as well. They're going on now as well, too, as we speak. Talk to me about these hickory golf tournaments. Who plays in them primarily?
Well, there's a lot of different kinds. So there are gutty tournaments for these smooth-faced and a gutty ball. And there are The national championship for the U.S. Hickory Open is sponsored by the Society of Hickory Golfers, of which I'm a member. And they'll play a modern ball with 1900 and 1935 clubs.
Okay, cool.
Then there's our organization sponsors its annual Hickory. Bring whatever kind of Hickory club you want and compete for that. That is the longest standing Hickory tournament.
This is on my list. I've done a lot of interesting golf adventures, but I've yet to really participate in a full round with the old Hickory. So I'd love to check this off my bucket list for golf someday. I'm curious, how does it actually play out? That's what everyone wants to know is like, okay, you know, I've heard the old wives' tale that when you hit it smooth off the Hickory, like there's nothing smoother than anything you could experience with maybe today's technology. But how do the scores in these Hickory golf tournaments or the yardages or distances says maybe compare to what we're seeing nowadays in golf?
I'm going to respond to a couple of things you said. You're right. When you hit a golf ball squarely, it gives a real nice feel. You don't even feel it at all. The ball just takes off.
Nice.
Whether it's a Hickory club, a Pyrotone, a classic club, and it just goes. So the scoring, yesterday I met a friend who I played once before with, and he was visiting Pittsburgh. So I had a few hours. So I met him at the Muni, where we also, by the way, host the first tee of Pittsburgh. I played Hickory with him. The first hole, I had a bogey. Second hole was the hardest. And we play over the road because the course was built before there were automobiles.
Oh, perfect.
So I had a six there. The next hole was a long hole, 407. And I actually got a par on it, par four. And then back up the hill, I had a five. And the par three, I had a three. So I was hot.
Okay.
So the players that are good players play in the U.S. Hickory Open and the National Hickory Championship. They'll shoot par with the balls that we play. And they play up. The courses are shorter because the balls are shorter. And that's how we do it.
Very cool. There's a lot of information on these Hickory golf events. If you want to learn more too, golfheritage.org, definitely check that out. You did mention the first tee. I want to shout them out. It's a perfect segue. First Tee Austin is our official charity sponsor here at the Course of Life. And we love working with them. I've got to visit the campus and talk with the director of the program. Tell me about your involvement with the First Tee programs and how you're kind of bringing these ideas and these collectibles and artifacts of golf's history to the youth that are coming up in the game.
Alex, I'm going to assume we have about an hour and a half to just get started on that.
Yes, we do, but, yeah.
But the summary statement is we're really blessed to have the history of the game in the First Tee because it's a wonderful opportunity to teach kids about the core values that the First Tee teaches. Finishing up my role as a board member for the First Tee of Pittsburgh. We just built a replacement building for the original 1898 building. It wasn't really fit for the children to be in. But now we have the Arnold Palmer Learning Center, which is a facility that's dedicated to the teaching the history of the game of golf to those young people through the First Tee. They have a big play area, but we also use the clubhouse for the pro shop and a meeting place for the community to have meetings and have a beautiful view of the city of Pittsburgh while some of the folks can go out and play golf. So this is year 16 for the First Tee of Pittsburgh to take kids out with hickories and let them play. We start out usually by just having a conversation with the young folks about the ball and the clubs like we talked about earlier. And of course, they say, hey, can we play with these? So we do a chipping and putting. And at the end of that, they say, hey, can we take these out onto the course?
Yes.
And they play a few holes and they say, hey, can we play a full round with these? And, you know, it's a great, great way to get them going.
It's neat. It puts a new twist on the game they've already fallen in love with. I love that involvement with the First Tee. Great stuff you're doing there.
Alex, there's one more thought about that. You know, when we send them out with those clubs, we tell them, flip over those clubs and look at the back. There are what's called clique marks. The maker of the club, the handmade club, one at a time or manufactured. You can tell who made it, where, and approximately when. So we ask the young people to pay attention to that. And at the end of the day, they'll know whose club they play. They'll go look it up and they'll be attached to researching the history of the game of golf.
Yeah, that's interesting. There really is a story behind each one of those that was made so, so long ago. Very cool. It's again, it's Dr. Bern Bernacki, the Golf Heritage Society, golfheritage.org is the website. Tell everyone about this 50th anniversary GHS convention. And from what I understand, there's also a trade show available for golf fans, anyone really to attend who's interested in learning more about the history of the game. What's coming up for you guys?
Yeah, that shopping idea is really important and great. That's the trade show. I'm going to speak to that first. It's kind of like a shopping mall experience inside the hotel in the Grand Ballroom. You'll see almost a half a football field worth of collectibles, old clubs, balls, ephemera, ceramics, paper products, programs, tees, everything around the game of golf and golf history. And anybody who's looking for anything to boost a collection or improve their golf club play sets of any era, we have it there. So it's a wonderful opportunity for us to show and tell and help people develop their emerging interest in old golf.
Nice. And that's coming up soon. Tell everyone the details of the event and where it is and how they can find more information about it.
Great, Alex. So we'll be in Greater Pittsburgh, just east in Monroeville is the neighborhood, at the DoubleTree Hotel. And it's right by the Monroeville Mall. And it's going to be a wonderful 4-day event. The day before, we'll do a warm-up on one of our semi-rural courses. And then we're going to play Arnold Palmer's Latrobe Country Club, which is another 20 miles east.
Yes.
And we'll have our Hickory Championship. But the event itself will be at the hotel, and we have the usual educational opportunities for our folks. This year, we're doing something really unique, really different for us. We're recognizing the golf art in the game, and we have seven notables in the game of golf who are going to do presentations in a roundtable about their work, what inspires them. And it's going to be a wonderful opportunity. Plus, their work will be displayed in and around the trade show. So it's a wonderful opportunity for people to get close to the artwork of the game of golf.
Love that. So golfers and artists as well out there who want to attend in Pennsylvania, be sure to look up more information about that. Let's get to a few quick shot questions before we wrap up here with Dr. Bern Bernacki, president of the Golf Heritage Society. So talking golf collectibles specifically, the things I had to know, I'm curious, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there that we know is worth a lot of money for being, whether it's an ancient or a rare or unique collectible. What do you know as being some of the or the most valuable golf collectible on the planet? And where would you potentially find something like that?
Well, I had the opportunity to play the old course at St. Andrews. It's a great story. But their historian of the R&A watched me play golf with my hickories. It was kind of an unnerving experience being on the first tee over the ball with 40 club members watching. But inside of the R&A are two of the most revered collectibles that exist. Of course, the claret jug, which is the trophy of the Open, played in a rotating fashion in the rota there. The other is just below it, and it's called Tommy's Belt. And it's called Tommy's Belt because it's a championship belt won 4 times in a row by young Tom Morris, and they retired the belt and gave it to him.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. Tommy's Belt. I'm going to have to look more into that. So that and the claret jug, and they sit right next to each other at St. Andrews, huh?
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Very cool. Nice. One other valuable thing I did hear about on the internet recently regarding golf collectibles, I'd heard that there was an astronomical 6-figure price for a backup putter of Tiger Woods's back in the day that he used. I'm curious, just in terms of people interested in like Tiger Woods memorabilia or anything like that, is there lots of that stuff on the market? How do people find and get in contact with rare memorabilia like that? Is there some sort of auction network that only the richest of the rich know about? And how does that all go down?
You know, we cover the range. Yes, that putter was sold for $365,000.
Yes,
because Tiger held it, and that's a high end thing. You can find high end things with some of the collectors in our conversation in Golf Heritage Society, and we broker those things. The auction houses are usually dedicated to the high end, but we delight in those personal collectibles that are important to you. We never forget about those pencils and scorecards that we collect, because that's the first time we played a U.S. Open venue, or the first time we played with mom and dad. These are incredibly important personal items and collectibles in the game of golf. And there's everything in between. Our organization, the Golf Heritage Society, golfheritage.org, will allow folks to connect with people at any level for any type of collectible that they become interested in.
Very cool. Love that. Golfheritage.org. Again, I want to tell you a quick story. Maybe you can be a little bit of an appraiser for a moment, kind of like an antiques roadshow format here. I'll present to you what I think is my most valuable golf collectible that I own. I've got lots of autographs. I've gotten a Tiger autograph and whatnot, but it was the 1999 Bank of America Championship. It was a Champions Tour event in my hometown, and little 12-year-old Alex was lucky enough to be picked to be the standard bearer for a threesome that contained Arnold Palmer. So after I walked 18 holes with Arnold Palmer, he came out of the scoring tent and he handed me a signed golf ball, and it has the Bay Hill umbrella logo on it, signed by Arnold Palmer. And I've kept it to this day. I'm curious, well, what do we think that's worth? What should I be doing with that right now?
Well, the monetary value is irrelevant.
It's priceless to me. Yeah, I'm curious what your thoughts are on it.
That's the word that you want to focus on. It is a treasure. Yes, you can sell that for money, but it's the story that brings that collectible to life. That's a wonderful story, Alex, and one of very many. Too bad you don't have that standard you were carrying signed. That would be a little more rare than the signed golf ball. But nonetheless, you have a personal treasure and it has some economic value. That's wonderful.
Yeah, that was unique. I love the connection that you had to Latrobe and Arnold as well, too. So I had to bring that up. Yeah, for the kids out there, if you're standard bearing, get the sign signed as well by the player, in addition to that golf ball. Love it. Hey, Dr. Bernacki, we love to close our interviews because we're all golfers here and we all love 18 holes, but we have to ask and end every interview with our 19th hole question. So when you finish a round of golf, whether it's playing with the new technology or the hickories, and you get into the clubhouse, what is your go-to choice or like your favorite meal or drink you love to have after a round of the course?
Well, you're going to love it, but I'd love to have an Arnold Palmer after every round of golf. And
yes,
everyone knows that that's a little iced tea and topped off with a lemonade. That will be my go-to.
Yeah. Can't go wrong there. It's a classic. Love the Arnold Palmer. Again, Dr. Bernacki and the Golf Heritage Society. It's golfheritage.org and the convention and trade show. You can learn more about it at the website coming up soon. Thank you so much for hopping on, talking the history of the game, and looking forward to seeing more history chronicled by you as well.
Alex, thanks for the opportunity. It's really been a lot of fun. Thanks so much.
And we're back. Great chat there with Dr. Bernacki. $400,000 for a backup putter for Tiger Woods.
Yes,
if I
that's
had
right.
$400,000, no offense to this entire conversation, I would not be spending it on Tiger Woods' backup putter.
Wouldn't you love to just be one of those human beings that could bid on something like that for $400,000?
A lot of disposable income, then maybe that would be something I would consider, just to be able to spend the money. But
that was fun talking about the relics and the valuables in golf. And that Clara jug must be worth millions of dollars. If it's the OG, the real OG Clara jug, never quite thought about the value of something like that. But that was a neat conversation, bringing back the history of the game with Dr. Bernacki. Again, it's the Golf Heritage Society. That was cool. The 50th anniversary, the convention. Check out the website. It's a really neat follow and definitely one to check out and read up on the history of the game. And I'm holding on to that Arnold Palmer signed golf ball for life. Like I jokingly said, I want to know what it's worth, but in reality, I think I am keeping that for the rest of my life. It's just too close to my heart. What a great moment in time there.
And you know, you should put that up on our socials. We're going to put that up You got that sentence.
I am. Yes, I do have a picture of that. Okay, I'm going to find that. Thank you. Yes, we'll get that up.
We're going to do that. And if you want to help make this podcast more valuable, then leave a rating, subscribe, share it with a friend. Let them know that we are incredibly amazing and we deserve to be rated highly so that we can become incredibly valuable.
And that's actually how this conversation came about, was someone who inherently did find us through our audience and reaching out through social media and our presence out there. So we work hard a lot to bring the greatest guests to you every week, but that conversation actually genuinely came our way. And there's a lot more where that came from as well, too. So love growing the network. And it was cool to talk a little golf history as well.
It was indeed. Let's talk a little football, because this also went very well for you. Another week of winning.
It was nice. It was a wedding Saturday. So I was kind of half paying attention, throwing the shirt on, getting the shoes shined as I was watching the early games, partying all through the afternoon and night, catching glimpses of the scores. But it was a crazy week nonetheless. Penn State, the big winner for me over Auburn, the big whiteout night game. But yeah, the picks are over 500 right now. Again, it's Course of Life 1 on Twitter for my weekly card. I love betting the Thursday, Friday college football games and a whole chunk of them on Saturday. So hopefully we can keep the momentum rolling for the rest of the season.
You're also hoping that your momentum keeps rolling for the Mac Jones era, where the Patriots notched their first victory of the season. Congratulations. You can only go to the Super Bowl from here. There's nowhere to go right there.
Yeah. I mean, here's what looms, Mike. Next week, we'll be getting all into it. Obviously, the Saints are coming up for Mac now, but then next Sunday night, Mike, Gillette Stadium, we've got Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers coming into Foxborough.
Buccaneers.
Oh, yeah, they'll be undefeated. I can already call that. They'll be undefeated. Yeah. to say that's going to be maybe the game of the year is an understatement, him making his return to the Gillette Stadium crowd. So already got my antenna peeled towards that in just a few days now. It's coming up soon.
Expect that game to be a lot of cheering for Tom Brady, or do you expect the typical, like, they're going to cheer him at the very beginning, then after that, he is fair game, he is dead to them, just forget about him?
I think it's going to be a lot of cheering, honestly. I would love to think that we could come and boo him in the big moments. I think we could get loud on third down when it needs to, but there is just too much freaking love for Tommy Boy in that stadium. It's going to be hard for fans to resist a cheer, especially if he starts dishing him out to Gronk, too. That'll be the real cherry on top next Sunday night, but we'll get all into that next week. But I got to check back on you, Mike, for a little heart attack watch. The Giants last Thursday night, you had your game won. It was one. I watched the field goal miss, and then all of a sudden, you were giving the Washington football team a second chance of life, and they kicked the game winner through right in front of your eyes. It was a horribly ironic finish to the Giants' loss.
I'm sorry, I blacked out there for a minute. What are we talking about?
Yes. That was New York Giants football, Washington football team. So it is 0-2 for you guys. You kind of declared the season over at a few different junctures this offseason. Are we still sticking with that narrative? It feels like we are.
I'm sorry. I know you're talking, but I don't know what you're talking about.
We're going with silent treatment until we get the first win.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on here.
It's all good. Let's hashtag always end with food, brought to you by our friends at Toasty Snacks, makers of the Toasty Bites. Go to toasty.com/COL, promo code COL20 for 20% off. I had a trip last weekend for the wedding weekend to Illinois. I got the usuals in. I got in the pizza and the Italian beef. But I know what you'll appreciate is I got some real fall nostalgia in. We did a nice afternoon trip to the – not only did we hit the pumpkin patch, we hit the apple orchard afterwards. It doesn't get any more fall than that, right?
You know how incredibly jealous I am of you now? Like, you got to go apple picking. I hate you, Alex. I hate you.
It was great that I got to pet the animals. I was feeding goats and sheep at the pumpkin patch. I was hopping on trucks and walking through fence mazes. I had the lovely apple cider donut and an apple cider combo, which I posted at Always End with Food Pod. You can hear more about that on our food podcast later this week. So I was getting all the fall vibes. It was nice to be back at the orchard. Good times indeed. I mean, just apple everything, Mike. You forget how many apple products can be made when you're at an apple orchard. It's a daunting amount.
There's a lot. You can literally put an apple in anything. And as we all know, it'll keep the doctor away.
Yes, that's right. And shout out to my nephew, Connor, who botched that sentence this past week. And he said an apple a day will keep the dentist away. So according to him, I think that has changed in a generation gap. I guess it's not the doctor anymore. Breaking news.
Well, dentists are doctors. So
yes, they are. Love that. That was my food venture this past weekend. What'd you get into?
So there's this place here in Savannah called Pie Society. They do British meat pies. They do some sweet pies as well. They do a lot of different British things. They have a food truck, by the way, that does fish and chips, best fish and chips in the city, hands down.
Nice.
And they do this high tea box. They call it a Brit box that you can purchase. They do it like once a month. Not a whole lot of money, and it's high tea for two. And we bought it this weekend. The wife got it, and we met me during my lunch break while I was working this weekend, and we had high tea.
Oh my goodness. What an eloquent little elevated experience for you and the wife there, huh?
Yeah. It's meat out in a square. Now it was a lot. It was fantastic. It was a lot of carbs. I was feeling it like all day and into the next morning.
I love that.
But it was a wonderful selection of, you know, we had like cucumber sandwiches. We had raisin scones with cream and jam. We had sponge cake. We had quiche. We had chocolate tarts. It was fantastic. It was very
good. That's the move right there. Savannah, Georgia, if you're in town, that's a lovely little date idea. Shout out to High Tea for two. High Society in the Brick Box. Love that. That was hashtag Always End With Food. Check out Always End With Food Pod. We'll have another episode coming soon there as well. And we thank you for tuning into Course of Life. We'll see you next week.